Inside the Game with Pat Williams is a pre-recorded show.
It's time for Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. We gather like this every weekend to talk to some really, really interesting people. You're plugged in, of course, to AM 950, FM 94.9, The Answer in Orlando. Now, let me just get this resolved. Jeffrey Sennis, the engineer, he gets us on the air. Andrew Herdliska produces the show. And I want to introduce you to Scott Howard Cooper. He's in Sacramento, California. And he has authored one of the best sports books that's come out in a long time. It's called Kingdom on Fire. And it traces that great UCLA basketball history with Coach John Wooden, Lou Alcindor / Kareem. Then came the Bill Walton era and on and on. And Scott, boy, oh boy, you have just captured it all. It's a magnificent piece of work. How you doing, my friend?
I am doing great, and I appreciate that intro. Thank you.
Scott, tell me how you got into this topic and what triggered all this.
It actually has been many years in the making. People say, how long did it take you to work on this? And I don't really have a solid answer because I signed my contract with Atria and Simon & Schuster, the publisher, in a couple years ago. But I look back at my notes. I've been working on this since early in the 2000s. 2005, I think, was the first interview I did. Just sort of start and stop. And I would spend a couple hours one day and set it aside and not do anything for a while. And I think that that's one of the things that convinced me that I needed to get a book deal and move forward, is because it just wouldn't let me go. I didn't pick the topic. The topic picked me. I just found I had a great passion for this idea, which was not to do a typical sports book, but to do the story of this basketball dynasty and set it against the backdrop of unique times, America in the 1960s and 1970s. And there's a lot in there. It's not a history book. It's not a political book. It's not an entertainment book, but there's a lot in there about, of course, Vietnam and civil rights and Nixon. And California had a first-time politician as governor, Ronald Reagan, and Summer of Love, and Kent State, and it's just nonstop madness. And here you have this gentleman coach from the Midwest, John Wooden, holding it together basically with tape and bubble gum, and they were the stability in a time of great instability. And that's the bottom line on my idea. And that's, it just wouldn't let me go.
Scott Howard Cooper is our guest. Scott, talk to me about John Wooden. Who was this man? What did you learn about him? What are we going to learn about him when we read this?
Well, he was absolutely fascinating. And we all know, I think most people know, the John Wooden in retirement, America's grandfather, still a very popular figure on YouTube. I'm told that his videos of his speeches still get a lot of hits. Of course, there's a lot of John Wooden books out there and things, but this John Wooden was not that John Wooden. I think if you would have told his players during the run of 7 championships in a row in 10 and 12 years that this would be the kindly gentleman, they would have had a hard time believing it, because when he was coaching, he was a man on fire. No cussing, but boy, he knew how to raise his voice, and he knew how to get his point across with very pointed language that never veered into vulgarity, but still, he could say things to players that would just make them wince. They would say, I wish just once he would cuss me out, because he could just be so, he had a blunt force trauma with his vocabulary. He was riding the refs constantly from behind the rolled up program he had on the bench. He would even make comments to opposing players, but he was very demanding. He was a man on fire. And I found all the characters so interesting, and certainly John Wooden one of the most interesting.
The fact that he lived till 99 and became this grandfather type to thousands of people. If he had died at 75, we never would have seen that other John Wooden. I've often thought about that, Scott.
Absolutely. And one of the, I think the special things of this book is to see how his relationship evolved with his players. Just as we say that John Wooden changed in the way he carried himself as a coach as opposed to in retirement, the evolution of his relationship with Lou Alcindor at the time and, of course, later Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton is one of the most fascinating parts because he got along with both of his superstar centers, but it was nothing like where you would say, you know what, I bet it's going to come a time in the 1990s and in the 2000s that he's going to be family with these guys. He's going to be in a loving relationship, a father-son relationship with Bill Walton and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Nobody would have believed it because he got along with them well. But to trace the evolution of how things changed, I think, is one of the interesting parts. And when we talk about watching our characters change through the decades, starting with them in the 1960s and going up to the early 2000s with Coach, and then, of course, much later with many of his players, I thought it was one of the most enjoyable parts of doing this project, just to see how they grew together. In some ways, the story of friendship, it's a love story in some ways because he came to see Coach as a second father. Just heartwarming in a lot of ways. And that was John Wooden with his players, and that was several of the teammates from those years who have remained the closest of friends.
How did Lou Alcindor end up at UCLA?
He wanted to get out of New York. I think he was like a lot of teenagers and saying, I just got to get out of here. And even though there was a lot of opportunities in New York City. Certainly, it wasn't like this place is boring, but he had been in the middle of riots, race riots in New York City, and he wanted to be someplace where he found more progressive, more welcoming to blacks, especially college students, and he was convinced that UCLA was that place. It turned out he was very wrong. And he realized that pretty quick. But he liked the idea of a few other places. He liked Michigan. He liked St. John's and a few other places, but decided he wanted to get out of there. Took a recruiting trip to UCLA and couldn't believe what he was seeing, that green grass, leaving the snow of New York to go out, to fly out to L.A. for the recruiting visit, green grass and sunshine and girls in short shorts and everything. And he thought, well, this is the place for me. Hmm.
Tell me about John Wooden, the recruiter.
He was the most blunt way to put it. He was a terrible recruiter. He did not like doing it. He basically had to be forced into recruiting Power Memorial senior Lou Alcindor. The athletic director, J.D. Morgan, pretty much insisted on it, and he sent John Wooden's top assistant coach, Jerry Norman, to New York for the visit with John Wooden to make sure that things went as well as possible. And Jerry Norman told me for this book, he said it was pretty clear that coach was hoping that Lou Alcindor would not come to UCLA. Coach didn't want him. He thought it would be too much trouble that here's this guy that is going to be getting so much attention. He's going to be wanting the ball all the time. It's going to mess up my team approach. I like to play fast. I like to build my team around guards. Remember, he had just had tremendous success with the Gale Goodrich, Walt Hazard backcourt. And so he didn't know what to do with the center. And he didn't know what to do with the guy that would be supposedly have this huge ego and demanding the ball all the time. And it turned out that John Wooden admitted he was wrong, that that's exactly the opposite of who Lew Alcindor really was, that he was a team-first guy and he was all about wanting other people to get the attention. But going into it, John Wooden didn't want Lew Alcindor.
That's fascinating. Just fascinating. Tell me how John Wooden worked with Alcindor to create the Skyhook.
Oh, I love this story. It was really by accident. One of the greatest moves in basketball history came about by a fluke of circumstances. The summer before, Lou was back in New York, as he always returned home during the off seasons for his summer vacations. And he got into thinking that different forms of martial arts would help him out. For one thing, he was such a curious young man that knew things like martial arts really appealed to him. For another thing, he saw the basketball potential, that as he was getting beat up by all these defenses that couldn't stop him playing him straight up, were getting more and more physical. So he thought, well, if I can come up with something to improve my agility, to improve my strength, that's going to help me on the court. And so he got into martial arts, and he ended up, when he came back out to Los Angeles, he had a mutual friend connect him with Bruce Lee. Now, at that time, Bruce Lee was known as a TV guy. He played Kato on an ABC television series, The Green Lantern. But he was not this world-renowned martial arts guy that he later became. But he and Lew Alcindor really connected and worked a lot on the agility. And then the next thing that happens is the NCAA outlaws the dunk. So to counter that, John Wooden says, you've messed around with this hook before. John Wooden didn't really like the shot a lot. It was more of a flat hook. He said, let's see if we can tweak it. And Lew Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, put it perfectly in later years. He said they went to work on it like two mechanics.
Scott, we got to take a break, and then we're going to come back. This is Scott Howard Cooper, who has authored this marvelous book, Kingdom on Fire. It's the whole UCLA story. Oh, it's wonderful. We'll be right back. I'm Pat Williams, your host. It's Inside the Game. And this is AM 950 and FM 94.9, The Answer in Orlando. Scott Howard Cooper is in Sacramento, California. We're talking about his book, Kingdom on Fire. So, Scott, can you continue this Skyhook story?
Yeah, I don't mean to go on so long. It's just one of the real great storylines in basketball history. So John Wooden ends up working with Lew Alcindor and turning the flat hook into the sky hook. And because of Lew Alcindor's work with Bruce Lee, because of his interest in martial arts that gave him greater strength and greater agility, and then he and John Wooden worked on the basketball aspect, out of this comes the shot that in many ways changes basketball history. The sky hook turns Kareem Abdul-Jabbar into what at one time was the leading scorer in basketball history. And it was a John Wooden, Lew Alcindor collaboration.
Great story. J.D. Morgan plays a big role in your book. And I didn't quite fully understand what a dominating guy he was and was constantly sending John Wooden messages down on the bench and doing things. I mean, you got to tell me more about J.D. Morgan.
J.D. Morgan was a brilliant mind. He had a great business sense. He had an unbelievable memory that he could recite some single line, minuscule detail in a contract that he had negotiated for 5 or 7 years ago. He was blustery, pompous, loud, and he tried to intimidate people. And he had this partnership with John Wooden that worked well because John did not always like him personally, but he appreciated him and he respected him, and he understood that J.D. Morgan was making a difference for the basketball program and the entire athletic department. And so they sort of found this middle ground, and there would certainly be moments that J.D. Morgan crossed the line. As you mentioned, he would either send messages to the bench during games. He would talk to assistant coaches during halftime and say, well, we need to get this player in the game more. We need to make this adjustment. And my goodness, you with your basketball background, could you ever imagine somebody doing that these days? And the assistant coaches knew how to handle it. They would just say, all right, you know, got it. I'll make sure that coach gets the message, and then immediately toss it out into the circular trash can or just kind of blow them off. And so they knew that. But this was a team that worked together because neither of them allowed ego to get in the way. John Wooden really had no ego, but he also could have put his foot down and said, I can't deal with this anymore, I quit. But he never did that. J.D. Morgan never pushed too hard. And they were a perfect tandem because J.D. Morgan knew how to get the money rolling in. And it was J.D. Morgan, as I said, who insisted on recruiting Lou Alcindor out of New York City. J.D. Morgan insisted on doing the game of the century against Houston in the Astrodome. John Wooden wanted no part of that game. And it turned out to be one of the great difference makers in college basketball history and certainly for the advancement of the UCLA program. And it was one of these things that there was a lot of rough edges around that relationship, but they both found a way to make it work.
Who was Sam Gilbert, and where does he fit in this story?
Sam Gilbert was a sort of a fringe booster fan in the early to mid-1960s. He went to UCLA but did not graduate. He was having success in the construction business, and there came a point where Lucius Allen, star guard, and his good friend at UCLA, Lou Alcindor, were going to transfer. And they were both pretty honest about it at the time and saying, the money just isn't working. We can't afford to live here. We can't afford to go out and do the normal college student stuff like movies and parties and take girls out on dates. And so they were close to transferring. And there was a former Wooden player who ended up with a long NBA career. Willie Nalls was back in Los Angeles as sort of a mentor to a lot of these players. And he said, let me introduce you to Sam Gilbert. And Sam stepped in and stepped up financially and didn't care about the whatever NCAA rules prohibited paying players. And basically from that moment on, became not just this fringe booster, but that's when he turned into a major player in the UCLA program. That there's no indication that Sam had any role in recruiting players. A lot of people will kind of make that assumption, but that's not true. But he certainly had a role in keeping them happy once they were there. And all the players for many years after that, during this entire dynasty that we're talking about, credit Sam Gilbert with making their life easier in Los Angeles and helping them stay at UCLA as opposed to going someplace else. And so there's no question, and there's a lot of evidence, this is not just speculation, Sam had a role in the success as a booster at UCLA.
How did Bill Walton end up at UCLA?
Bill claimed that, has forever claimed, that he was the easiest recruit John Wooden ever had. He heard John Wooden give a speech at a basketball clinic in San Diego where Bill lived. I think Bill was, I don't have it right in front of me, I want to say somewhere 7th grade, 8th grade, and said, oh my gosh, this is who I want to play for. And that he was convinced from that moment because Bill's idea of how basketball should be played, even at a very early age, was the exact same as John Wooden. And that means moving the ball, a lot of passing. He and Bill Walton and Lou Alcindor were different in many ways, but they were very similar in the way they approached the game. It was team first, move the ball. I don't care about my stats. Neither of them wanted publicity. They both hated the spotlight. And so they had that same personality. And so John Wooden had the basketball fit that Bill Walton desired in terms of how you play the game. And then in personality, he thought that this guy was just hilarious with his Woodenisms and his all his phrases and goodness gracious and things like that. And Bill has said that he fell in, it was love at first sight. Ever since he was in middle school, and even though he took a recruiting visit to Stanford, that Bill never really considered any place but UCLA.
Scott Howard Cooper has written the book Kingdom on Fire. Fascinating read about that UCLA dynasty of John Wooden, Lou Alcindor, and Bill Walton, and on they went. As though, tell me how that pressure built on John Wooden. You know, winning year after year, then expecting to win. How did he deal with it?
Not well. It really wore on him. The fan expectations really frustrated him. The fact that he would see people early in the season and they would talk about, you know, what. Any hotels at the Final Four site, wherever it happened to be that year, or anything like that, that it was just assumed you were going to be playing for the championship. And the media pressure, the same way, he did not like it. There's no question that those were two of the factors that drove him out and had him thinking about retiring in the middle of the dynasty. He talked many times about walking away in the middle of this unimaginable success just because he didn't like the expectations. He had already decided to retire after the 1974-75 season, his final championship. And, of course, they had lost in 74, just 50 years ago, a couple weeks ago. When they lost to North Carolina State in Greensboro, double overtime in the semifinals at the Final Four, and they come back next year and with a different team. The Walton gang is gone, and he's got a much different group. And he wins the championship in San Diego in 1974-75, and he had announced his retirement the day before, and a booster came up to him after the game and said, "Congratulations, coach, this sure makes up for blowing it last year." Now, that story stayed with him the rest of his life and pretty much symbolized why he wanted to get away. He just hated the expectations. Well, his assistant coaches would say that one of the worst that he said winning the first championship was one of the worst things to ever happen to him, because then people would expect it. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why he did not want Lou Alcindor to come to UCLA, is because people would expect the championships. And so he really struggled with the expectations.
Most unusual man. Tell me about Nell Wooden, and where does she fit?
Oh, gosh. You talk about a partner. You talk about a fierce supporter. Nell and John Wooden were high school sweethearts, and I think in the Indiana terminology of that time, it would be the only girl he ever went with. They went steady the rest of their lives, and she was the other half of John Wooden's heart, and she saw the wear that all of this had on her husband, and oftentimes herself said, "I know he loves a lot of this. I know he really enjoys the university." Neither of them really ever fully embraced the Los Angeles life. They were a couple of Indiana kids, farm kids, who came out to the concrete jungle and struggled with that. But she would speak out and say, "I wish he would just retire. He it's not fair the way people are treating him. And she was loyal and loving and raised two kids and just a wonderful lady who was forever John Wooden's girl.
My guest is Scott Howard Cooper, the author of Kingdom on Fire. We've got more with Scott. We're just diving into this magnificent book he's written. Stay with us. It's Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. And this is AM 950, FM 94.9, The Answer in Orlando. We'll be right back. Howard Cooper, who's in Sacramento, California, has written this magnificent book on the UCLA basketball dynasty. So many interesting people and so many subplots and different stories. And one of the great stories, I think, Scott, is the Andy Hill story. What do you think?
This kind of epitomized what we were talking about a few minutes ago when we talked about the change relationship, the evolution of coach's relationship with a lot of his players over the years. And of course, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton were the most obvious and the most public. But Andy Hill, I think, is a whole new layer of insight into that evolution and what it says about John Wooden, the person, not just John Wooden, the coach. Andy Hill was a Southern California guy from, gosh, I think he went to high school. It must be 5 or 7 miles from UCLA, someplace really close on the west side. And like a lot of people, he fell in love with UCLA basketball and John Wooden. And oh my gosh, this man is up on a pedestal. And his career was so-so. He played a lot. He had a good role. For a couple of the years, contributor on championship teams. Other times did not play a lot and got very frustrated, would be very outspoken, not exactly a John Wooden guy in that way. Andy Hill was not a go-along, get-along. He was not a bad guy. He just would be outspoken. And when they had, during the Vietnam protest, there was something called a moratorium, where, if people don't know the background, it was an attempt to have a nationwide protest to speak out against American involvement in Southeast Asia. And it happened to be that the moratorium was on the first day of practice after UCLA had won the 1969 championship. So it would have been the fall, October of 69. And Andy Hill goes to John Wooden and says, you know, we'd really like to support this. How about we cancel practice today and show our support for America? Yeah, exactly. That is the perfect reaction. John Wooden looked at Andy Hill and said, Andy, you don't have to come to practice today. You don't ever have to come to practice. And just put a laser right through Andy Hill's heart. That's what we said before, that John Wooden could be very blunt without raising his voice. He could be hurtful with his comments. And this just brought Andy to his knees, put him in the fetal position. And so they did not always have a great relationship. And it was much later in life that Andy Hill had gone on and become very successful in the entertainment industry, TV and movies, on the production side, the executive side. And somebody said something that reminded him of John Wooden, and it had been many years since they spoke. And Andy Hill said, I'm just going to call him. He took the initiative, he called him, and John Wooden treated him as though they had been best friends who hung out the day before, that they had been in touch all these years. Andy, how are you? Where are you? Let's, you know, catch me up. And they got together that day and remained very close friends for the rest of Coach's life. And Andy Hill, this man who frustrated John Wooden to no end, and Andy disliked Coach's decisions in a lot of different ways, again, and was pretty outspoken about it, ended up being one of John Wooden's most loyal supporters. He was a constant in his life from that point on, because John Wooden did not hold a grudge. He understood that people change from the college student to the adult that has lived a long life, and that sometimes people in their younger days just say and do things that, if they don't regret it, that it doesn't necessarily brand them as who they are for the rest of their life. I think that the Andy Hill-John Wooden relationship says a great deal about Coach.
Scott Howard Cooper is our guest. His book, Kingdom on Fire. Scott, what would the ideal John Wooden player be like? What would be his qualities?
Oh, wow. That's a great one. That they are a, if we're talking college student, that they are a devoted student.
Mm-hmm.
That they carry themselves well, that they always have good intentions, that they can speak their mind, but don't cross that line. He did not agree with Bill Walton's stances always, but he also respected and supported Bill's right to have them until Bill got arrested, and then it crossed that line. So he liked players that understood the team game, who kept themselves in shape, even if they didn't have Bill Walton talent, that they had the approach. Once they stepped between the lines, that they came ready to practice, they were prepared, they were smart, they understood how the game should be played, not jacking up shots. And that's when he clashed with some players, some very talented players he clashed with, because they did not fit into the team scheme at all times. And I think if people want to picture somebody, take Jamal Wilkes, Keith Wilkes at that time. John Wooden said if he had to design a perfect player, it probably would be Jamal Wilkes, because he was just not only a super talent, but a super person. And as I'm sure you know from having been in that orbit for many years, anybody that crosses paths with Jamal Wilkes cannot help but be impressed that this is a guy with a good heart and a good mind, and certainly a terrific talent.
Mm-hmm.
He, in later years, his favorite players were John Stockton, Tim Duncan. He didn't like the flash. Anybody that was all about the slam dunks in the 360s, he would not like basketball today at all. He had already turned against it in the early 2000s. So imagine what it would be like, you know, what his opinions would be like today. He liked the guys that did the fundamentals and the guys that weren't all about pulling out their jerseys and boasting. He hated the boasting, didn't like the slam dunk at all. He liked the Tim Duncan players, the Jamal Wilkes players.
What were his practices like?
Precision. It was a surgical operation. The coaching staff would meet earlier in the day and say, here's what we're going to do, and it would be down to the minute. It wasn't just, let's do, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of free throws and let's work on our zone press for 15 minutes or so. It was to the minute. And he was an organization freak and would write down what he did on practice on February 15th, and the next year would go back and look on February 15th or in the days leading up to it, the week of planning that next practice. What did we do on February 15th last year and the year before? And they would copy it. It was all about organization and repetition. There was nothing fancy about it. The players couldn't believe some of the things they did. The opposing coaches sometimes would see his practices and say, are you kidding me? Dale Brown, later the great LSU coach, of course, had a great deal of success in Louisiana, was an assistant coach at Washington State and was at an NCAA tournament where teams would have to share the practice court, of course, at different times. If one team would come on, the other team would come off. And Dale did a little covert operation, did a little spy work, and looked around, was there before, as a Washington State and UCLA practices overlapped for a few minutes and looked around the big curtain that had come down around UCLA practices and saw that the NCAA championships were working on jump stops and passes. You know, okay, Curtis Rowe, that's good, but make sure your elbows are out. And good job, Sidney Wicks. You came to a complete stop before you made the pass. And Dale Brown thought to himself, this is stuff you teach in elementary school. These are day one drills for fifth graders and sixth graders, and was astounded that the great John Wooden, he was about the fundamentals and organization and repetition. And if you do a drill in practice, you would do it over and over and over. John Wooden believed that games were won not on game nights, but in the empty gyms on a Monday or a Tuesday or a Wednesday afternoon at UCLA. It was about the practice.
Tell me about Sven Nader and where he fits in this story.
Sven Nader, wow. This is a great point, because when we talk about the UCLA history, and obviously everything comes back to the centers when you talk about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton, but there were several other players. There were several centers that would be easily the best center at most any other program, right? These guys that went on to have long NBA careers, like Steve Patterson and Ralph Drawlinger and the man you just mentioned, Sven Nader, who came from so far away. He was a junior college guy, and John Wooden said, you know, it's good to have a backup. We'd love it if you came here, but you know what? You're never going to play, but we'd love to have you. And so Sven goes and not only improves more than anybody that John Wooden ever had, but ends up being a star during the trials for the 1972 Olympic team that was going to Munich. And through various reasons, he ends up quitting the team. The Olympic coaches said he just couldn't handle it, which wasn't true, because if you can handle a John Wooden practice, you can handle anything. As I just said, John Wooden practices were extremely demanding. Sven said that there was a serious problem with getting food, that the accommodations at the trials, and he wasn't looking for the Four Seasons, but these were horrible conditions, and a lot of players agreed with him that the regimentation of when they were able to eat and what they had to eat and different things like that. He ends up quitting, but at the same time is a valuable member of the UCLA program, because he, like Ralph Drawlinger, is making everybody around him better. And Bill Walton would come to say some of the toughest competition he faced from an opposing center during his college years came from practice.
Scott Howard Cooper is my guest. We have one more segment with Scott. He's written the book Kingdom on Fire. It's a must read about the UCLA basketball dynasty. The show Inside the Game. I'm your host, Pat Williams. It's AM 950 and FM 94.9. The Answer in Orlando. We'll be right back. Scott Howard Cooper has written a magnificent book, more than just basketball, Kingdom on Fire, about that whole UCLA dynasty of Coach Wooden. Scott, tell me the story of the B.O. Barn, and then the Pauley Pavilion comes along, and where did Coach Wooden fit into all this story?
He came out in 1948 with the promise that, yeah, we've got this building on campus, but we're going to get a new gym soon. And the fact that it was called the B.O. Barn should tell you everything you need to know about this campus gym, and we use that word liberally, it was more of a band box. It was a shoe box, and it would get so hot in there that the place would stink up. And they called it the BO barn, the body odor barn, and other times it would be cold. And it was a dump, and they had to share practices in there sometimes with other sports teams at UCLA, and John Wooden was sweeping the floors himself to get the chalk up from I think maybe the wrestling team or something had been using. And there had been this idea that was moving forward about some in an arena on campus, probably about 50 or 75 yards away from the BO barn. And it gets done thanks in large part to the fundraising efforts. The chief fundraiser was a guy named H.R. Haldeman. Anybody who was around in the 1970s or follow history, H.R. Haldeman ends up becoming one of the most powerful men in the country. He's Richard Nixon's chief of staff in the White House. And H.R. Haldeman and John Wooden had a friendship for the rest of their lives, in large part because of the introduction that John Wooden appreciated that this UCLA alum, Haldeman, worked so hard to get funding for Pauley Pavilion. When they got Pauley Pavilion, that was a huge advantage, because before then, even while winning championships, they had sort of been this vagabond program. They were playing in different gyms around Southern California, not only the BO barn, but other small facilities at smaller colleges or civic centers around Los Angeles. Pauley Pavilion was this gleaming building, and recruits would show up and it would be, oh my gosh, this place is fantastic. It was everything that the UCLA program deserved with all its success, and of course has stayed there ever since.
Scott Howard Cooper is our guest. We're talking about Kingdom on Fire. I am curious, Scott, how the UCLA organization today, friends of Coach Wooden, Coach Wooden's family, Kareem, Bill Walton, I wonder how they would respond to your book.
So far, it's been very positive. I have not talked to everybody. I have not put a survey out into the field or anything. I've gotten a negative reaction from one person, and that's not a surprise. If I were to tell you his last name is Gilbert, Sam Gilbert's grandson. I don't think he read the book, but he read one of the reviews that mentioned that Sam Gilbert's role in the success, and so he was bothered about that. But I've talked to a lot of people since. Gary Cunningham, who of course was an assistant coach at the time and later a head coach at UCLA, was in the middle of everything. Had some very nice things to say. Some other people that I quoted in the book were fantastic. I can say that the endorsement from UCLA was not a part of this project. This was an outside operation, but they've been very supportive in a way that signals that they find it to be very fair and credible. It's not a hagiography or anything like that for Coach or for the program. There certainly are some blemishes in there, but it feels like people are really responding to it. We've got some fantastic reviews early on in the weeks since we've been out. And it feels like it caught the right tone, because it was a bit of a risk. It's not a typical sports book, as I said from the very beginning. It's a lot about the times. It's setting the basketball program against the backdrop of everything going on in America, and especially college campuses in those days. And it feels like it really worked. And there's been some fantastic responses on that. And that means so much to me, because that's exactly what I wanted. I did not want the typical basketball book.
You know what I'm most curious about? The difficulty in coaching Alcindor. Same with Bill Walton. But yet, I just, not long ago, Kareem writes his book on his relationship with Coach Wooden. Bill Walton, it was like he was the greatest love in his life. I'm just fascinated by how these guys later on came back and had a whole different relationship with their coach.
Yeah, that, as I said, that's one of my favorite parts because it does turn out it has such a positive ending. I never imagined I would say this going in, and I don't know how many people say it after they can write after they write their book. But the epilogue is one of my favorite parts of this because there are so many happy endings. And Coach had the relationship with his players, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Bill Walton. We mentioned Andy Hill. So many other people. There's many stories that fit in the same vein. He had the relationship with his players that he could not have during their union, during their time together at UCLA. And part of that was because he's a coach and he couldn't be their friend. He had to be somebody that would come down on them. He had to be the man that used discipline with playing time and running in practice and different things like that. Later on, he was able to be their friend, and he was their very, very close friend, even their family members in many cases. And the other part, obviously, is people change quite a bit from their college years to their 40s and 50s and 60s. And that's exactly what happened here, that Bill Walton changed a great deal. Lew Alcindor to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar changed some, not as much. But these are good people at heart. And that layer of their life was just able to come out a little bit better after their basketball playing careers or after their movie careers or different things like that. And for Coach to end up having this relationship before it was too late. As you mentioned earlier, if he would have left us when he was 75 or even lived to some crazy age like 85, things might have been different. But because he went to 99 and spent so many nights in his condominium in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles watching baseball or old Westerns with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, just sitting in chairs having fun as friends do, made all the difference. And I think everybody around that program and everybody who knew Coach is so grateful for that, that it didn't just end when these guys were players and left after their eligibility was up, that there was a, not just a closure, but a warm closure.
Scott, I've got to tell you this. Coach Wooden was listed in the phone book. And if you were, say, a high school coach from Des Moines, and you wanted to call Coach Wooden and come out and see him and talk about your program or whatever, I mean, he would be available to you. He'd meet you at the condo, give you instructions on how to come up the elevator. I mean, he just was so available. It would warm your heart.
Wasn't he just unbelievable? Do you know the story about when he won the Presidential Medal of Freedom?
Oh, yeah, and hung it up. The
most prominent civilian honor you can win in the United States. And John Wooden obviously is the epitome of that. He deserved it so much. He ends up, and look, if you or I won that, we'd build a monument in the front yard and have spotlights and loud and, you know, church music and different things like that, right? John Wooden hangs it up on a coat rack in the living room of his condo and puts it next to a medal that one of his grandkids had made for him in elementary school, just as, you know, little kids are wont to do for a school project, that said best grandfather ever. And John Wooden puts the Medal of Honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom next to the honor of best grandfather. And I think you and I both know which one meant the most to him, and it's probably not the one that he got in Washington, because that says who John Wooden is, maybe more than anything. That, Presidential Medal of Freedom, that's great. Hey, look what my grandkid made for me.
Scott, let me just close with this. Over the years, you know, I wrote four books about Coach Wooden. I've written a book on Bear Bryant, Bobby Bowden, Tom Osborne, Vince Lombardi, you know, in-depth study, Coach Wooden, and here's what I learned. You know, while they were playing for them, they were not always, that friendly. They were demanding and pushing them. But these guys, the players, years and years later, they would all tell me the same thing. Coach Wooden, Coach Bryant, Coach Bowden, they really were preparing me for life. Long after football or basketball, they were getting me ready for life. And I didn't realize it till I was in my 40s or 50s or 60s. Then I realized what they were doing. They were getting me prepared to be successful in life. So I think that was John Wooden's mission with his players, although at the time, you know, they were out there to win games and so forth. But I think they realized later that Coach Wooden really was setting them up beautifully for life.
Perfect. You nailed it. That's the perfect description of a great man. He was one of a kind, and his program was one of a kind, and those times were one of a kind.
Well, folks, Scott Howard Cooper has been my guest, and make sure you get the book. You'll be greatly moved by this book, Kingdom on Fire. I'm Pat Williams, your host. We've had a wonderful visit. We're back next weekend for more. The show is Inside the Game. We love to talk sports here on AM 950 and FM 94.9. The Answer in Orlando. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next weekend.
Inside the Game with Pat Williams is a pre-recorded show.